Today I'm talking to Tom Zaki, who is the co-founder and CEO of TerraCycle, the much talked about upcycling and recycling platform you might have read about in the news. Of course, we'll talk a lot about the brand building, deliberate, sometimes serendipitous, mostly through the platform partners, never behind advertising dollars that Tom is leading, but we'll also touch on a lot of other points, like how the legend spun around him as a person and the purpose of the company excite journalists, future partners, and employees alike. We'll also discuss that recycling is likely not the solution to our global waste issue, and how the new TerraCycle Loop program might be. As usual, there will be no interruptions by ads, sponsorships, or any solicitations. However, you can support us a lot by giving us a good rating and review, particularly on iTunes, if you like the show. And now, enjoy.
Please listen carefully.
Well, hello and welcome everyone to this episode of the Uber Brands podcast, the podcast in which we discuss brands that are desired beyond price, performance, or reason. Brands that seduce rather than sell, that add some myth to the material and shine from the inside out. We call them Uber Brands, and we, that is your host JP Kuhlwein and occasional co-host Wolf Schaefer. And today, I'm excited to have Tom Zaki on the line here with us. Tom is the co-founder and CEO of TerraCycle. Thanks for making some time, Tom. Much appreciated.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
As I just said, and you confirmed, you're a very, very busy man. And those who are in the CPG or fast-moving consumer goods industry will know about you and TerraCycle, but maybe other people might not yet. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what is TerraCycle?
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Tom. I'm the founder and CEO of TerraCycle. And what we've been doing for, gosh, almost 20 years now, across 21 countries in the world, is to really try to build a mission to eliminate the idea of waste. And we do that with effectively three major business units. Where you would know the TerraCycle brand the most from is our first business unit, which has to do with making those things that are not traditionally recyclable nationally recyclable. So that's everything from dirty diapers to used cigarette butts, from chewing gum to cosmetic packaging. And you would see the TerraCycle logo, for example, on billions of packages explaining how you can now recycle what you couldn't before. In addition, under the TerraCycle brand, our second division focuses not on making things recyclable, but instead integrating recycled content back into products and packages. So there is an example. We run the world's largest supply chain, for example, to ocean plastic, where we take ocean plastic and integrate it into things like the Head & Shoulders shampoo bottle or other packages from Unilever or Procter & Gamble and so on.
You're kind of a two-sided marketplace, is it? On the one hand, you have the recyclables that come to you. On the other hand, you manufacture, or you're a multi-sided marketplace, I guess. You're also selling, I think, recycling boxes to like retailers where they collect recyclables. Do I get that right?
Yes, exactly. So under the TerraCycle ecosystem, it's really one side is making things recyclable. And that could be everything from, as you say, like in-store collection, you know, where hundreds of thousands of retail shops have our collection platforms at the front of their store, all the way to, you know, citywide collections or other forms of collection, but nevertheless, getting the waste to us to be recycled. And on the other side, we focus on how do we integrate waste back into products.
Now, it sounds almost either you could say formidable or too good to be true, because as we know, the amount of trash we generate is immense, sometimes incomprehensibly big. How do you deal with this? Are you just an enormous, gigantic organization, or do you do it slowly? How does this work? How do you ramp it up?
Yeah, you know, look, the garbage crisis is massive and growing. And, you know, while TerraCycle for 16 years has only grown, relative to the scale of the problem, we are absolutely small. And so, you know, to solve for these waste streams. You really have to do it on a waste stream by waste stream, on a country by country basis. And that takes, as you can imagine, you know, quite a bit of effort and time to accomplish. Now, again, we've been doing well. We've been, you know, started acquiring companies and so on, but it does take time. And it is, you know, very much laying one brick on top of the other. As a response to this, one of the things that we launched very recently, in fact, 2 weeks ago in Paris and 1 week ago in New York, was a new platform we call Loop. And that is a platform where major brands and major retailers are working with us to shift away from single-use disposable products and packages that really are the genesis of the waste crisis to multi-use durable products and packages as a way to also combat the generation of this waste to begin with, not just to be able to collect and recycle it.
Right. And I want to get back to Loop in a second. This is a podcast about branding, and we felt you are an incredibly interesting brand because you're actually more in the background. You're an ingredient brand, if you like. But tell us about your brand building, TerraCycle as a brand. How did it start out? Is there an objective in terms of awareness, recognition, brand value? It obviously has become very desirable for industry players. You show up in Davos and everyone literally jumps on you looking for what are the latest proposals you have to make. But how does this did this all come about? Is it a conscious brand building effort?
You know, it's a good question. And I would say, to be very fair, I wish it was conscious. We sort of blindly found our way around the room, if you will, you know, and discovered a lot of very interesting things. So, you know, TerraCycle as a brand actually was a product brand to begin with. Our first product, you know, which was made from waste, was liquid worm poop in a soda bottle, which was an organic fertilizer. And the reason we called it TerraCycle was because it's earth and cycle, we felt was a good connection to the idea of worms, which were the sort of key ingredient to making our fertilizer. And then the logo, which looks now like almost like a recycling infinity sign, was actually, I drew this logo myself in college. It was a worm eating itself. That was sort of the idea. What was really fascinating about that is while that's where we began, when we shifted our business to what I described to you now, the word TerraCycle in the logo worked even better. And so, you know, we got very lucky that way. You know, you asked about like building and metrics and so on. What TerraCycle as an ingredient, you know, brand really relies on is the ability for our partners to build the brand for us. You know, so we don't, by policy almost, spend money on advertising. We never have, and I can't imagine us spending money on advertising. And instead, what we do is we convince the world's biggest advertisers, you know, the P&Gs, the Pepsis, the Colgates of the world, that if they promote TerraCycle on their package, on their advertising, on their social media, and so on, that they will win because of doing so. And that's a really nice symbiotic relationship because they win, they do better. And we get huge amounts of promotion, you know, without having to pay for it. And so this type of strategy has echoed not just how we work with our partners, whether it's brands or retailers, but also how we even work with the media. You know, we really focus on creating content and purpose versus paying for traditional advertising.
Right. Now, we say that Uber brands usually leverage legend and myth to some extent. And when I look up the stories that are being written about you, I do find quite a bit of that. I find stories about the Hungarian refugee who makes it to be a millionaire in the United States, which is obviously an American dream kind of story. We hear about the donkey shot of trash. We hear about one other Princeton or Ivy League dropout. Do these legends help you? Are you conscious of them? Do you employ them? Or do you say, no, they came up despite me?
No. Let's be very clear. The legends and the stories are critical to building a brand like this, especially if you're not going to pay for traditional advertising. And not only are they important, we constantly create more, you know, and we are in an environment where it's very easy for these type of stories to emerge and take on their own mythology. And it's so important because that is what the media wants to write about. That is what people want to hear, you know, and that's what makes them really understand and fall in love with what we're all about beyond just our services. And I want to echo that it's really two things that are a factor, because I think you hit a really astute point. It's this sort of the, you know, the storytelling, And there has to be a story for every stakeholder. You know, it's not just one story we keep repeating. It's, you know, it depends on what you're interested in. There's probably many stories around whatever topic of interest you may have. The other side, though, that I think is as important is the power of purpose. You know, I really think that TerraCycle is a good example of a brand that is really embodies purpose everywhere it goes. And that sort of purposeful stories or purposeful narratives, you know, ones that really aren't just fun, but show you how you're trying to make the world a better place, those really carry today and are really core, you know, and consciously core to how we've built, you know, the public facing perception of the company.
Right. And that's a second ingredient to Uber Brands, which is we talk about mission and myth. And the two actually go together to create a third M, which is meaning. On the other hand, there seems to be a little bit of purpose overload. It seems like nowadays almost any brand, whether it's a yogurt, a motor oil, or a tire, seems to want to save the world. How do you experience that? Does that hurt you?
Yeah.
Does it help you? How do you look at that?
You know what? You're absolutely right. And I think the difference that we try to draw are traditional companies that are trying to be a little better, you know, that quote unquote tire company trying to save the world, versus systems, at least how we try to view TerraCycle, as ones that are foundationally built to change the world, you know, in a positive way. So it's that distinction between this idea of purpose as a core idea or as a peripheral idea. Now, you know, look, companies all focusing on purpose, I think, has only helped us because it's elevated the idea that purpose is a critical thing that people need to focus on and have a very strong mission. And because we feel ourselves that we are more in the purpose's core, we still feel very differentiated amongst, you know, companies where purpose is the periphery. So net-net, I think it's great. And frankly, companies should be way more focused on purpose even than they are today. It should be as important as profit, if not maybe the first lens you look at an idea under.
Right. I mean, you clearly benefit from that. I mean, let's face it, I would think that quite a few of your client companies jump on your seal, jump on being part of your story because it's kind of a crutch for them to acquire some purpose. Would mm-hmm. you agree with that?
100%. 100%. And I think that's, you know, a key part, I think, of any core purposeful organization is to help other partners get a taste of that. And then hopefully they like it and then they try to embody it more deeply in their own organization.
Gotcha. Now, you're working across what is supposed to be fierce competitors fighting each other. Yeah. I think you work, let's say, with Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Kimberly-Clark all at the same time. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And in all industries, we see this, whether it's Coke, Pepsi, Danone and beverage, you know, to retailers, yes, always working with the competitive side.
How do you work that out? Are you a peacemaker, or do you have incredible Chinese walls, or how does that work out?
You know, neither. We're here to actually want them to constantly one-up each other. Well, this is actually a really interesting sort of Davos story. You mentioned Davos earlier. When we had launched Loop at Davos in January, we had a pavilion on the promenade. And in that pavilion, you know, P&G and Unilever both had displays showing the things they've been doing with us. And to me, this magical moment happened, which echoes sort of this whole idea of the competitive, you know, discussion is the new CEO of Unilever comes in, Alan Jope, with his team. And he looked at everything Unilever was doing and was sending congratulation notes and so on. But he spent most of his time looking at the P&G area and looking at what his competitor was doing and then sending emails to his team, probably saying things like, look at this innovation, let's do something better. And then 2 hours later, David Taylor, the CEO of P&G, comes in and does the exact opposite. And to me, I'm sitting back really excited because what's happening is they are pushing each other to use our platform more effectively, which is only helping us and the consumer and the world all at the same time. So our job is to keep the competitors wanting to beat the other within this world of solving for the waste issue.
You are in the news, and I've seen tons of articles about flower pots made from milk jars, I think at Walmart, Capri Sun, bags. Your office is made of trash. Critics would say those are PR stunts. They don't solve any of the environmental issues. The couple of bottles you have in your office or the couple of, even if it's thousands of Capri Sun bags, you know, won't resolve that issue. How do you counter people who say this is all to make money and bring in these big corporations, but it doesn't tackle the fundamentals?
Well, look, I would first agree. I think making, say, backpacks from juice pouches or decorating our offices, you know, around the world with waste is absolutely not going to solve the waste crisis. Let's take just a concrete example like juice pouches, because you'd mentioned the juice pouch example. So in juice pouches, we collect huge quantities, hundreds of thousands of juice pouches every day. Now, less than 1% will end up as those backpacks. Maybe even, I would say, 1% will end up as upcycled pencil cases, backpacks, and so on. The balance, 99.9%, will be shredded, cleaned, melted into plastics that will end up as industrial plastic applications, like shipping pallets and other industrial applications. So all the Capri Sun pouches that come in, which are actually quite at a large quantity, and other brands as well, are recycled into new outputs. When you sew them together into upcycled products, they are much more visual, and so they get a lot more attention because it's what the journalists want to show in their newspaper articles. But it's only a very, very small percentage of how we process the materials. And this, I think, is the difference between steak and sizzle. You know, steak in the world of, you know, waste management is super boring, industrial. People don't really, want to write articles and do big things about it. And sizzle, like the upcycling, is very small volume, but creates a lot of attention. And gotcha. You frankly need both to make it work, you know, to get the funding, to get the overall process. So I would agree, but I would also point out, you know, the huge volumes that happen behind the scenes that many people don't read about because it's just not as sexy.
Gotcha. That's a great metaphor. I guess the steak part of it requires quite a bit of expertise and possibly capital spending. How do you get those?
Absolutely. So we have a team of scientists and polymer engineers. If you came to our headquarters in Trenton, New Jersey, you'd see a whole floor of laboratories and scientists and, you know, really working on the polymer science. That's on developing the processes to recycle these waste streams. Then we partner with manufacturing companies like Suez in Europe and Waste Connections in Canada and other major large infrastructure companies who deploy our processes and effectively build production lines to be able to implement these processes. And then we give them the volume of waste, they process it, and then we take it back and sell it to end markets. And so that way we can really focus on the know-how of how do you recycle a cigarette butt or a crisp bag or whatever it may be. But we work with our large partners who float all the capital equipment exposure.
So you're really a platform in that sense. You don't actually own the pipes and the end product. You own the IP on how it's done, and you own the network and the connections, and you might physically collect and redistribute trash. Do I get that right?
That's correct. And throughout it all, we also own the garbage all the way through. So we take responsibility over the material. It'd be very similar as if you were a manufacturer and used third-party co-packers to manufacture your product. It would be more of a supply chain similar to that.
Now, you collect all kinds of things. A latest one that I read about in the context of Loop is, for example, toothbrush heads. When you buy these things, or they come to you, for example, through your zero waste boxes that you sell, are you guaranteeing that you actually reprocess everything at this point in time, or are there still a ton of materials, literally and figuratively, that you don't know yet how to process, or they're too dirty, or whatever it might be, and they still end up in landfill or on hold, let's say?
No, this is very important for especially a brand like TerraCycle, is everything is guaranteed to be materially recycled. Nothing ends up in incineration or landfill. Now, to be very fair to your question, you know, we may hold on to certain waste streams for even potentially a few years before we accomplish enough volume of a certain waste stream. But once we've hit our volume threshold, they all go into material processing. And that is critical because we get audited all the time by our partners. And you know, effectively, that's the promise they're buying. So that has to be taken exceptionally seriously. The only time we would ever send something to an energy solution is if you buy a zero waste box and you put something completely compliant into it. Or if you use one of our many free programs that are sponsored by retailers or brands, and again, if you put something compliant into it, that may be the only chance. But even there, we use best efforts to make sure even the compliant material can be recycled.
Gotcha. And you're operating around the world. So can you give us a sense like what your biggest markets are?
Yeah, absolutely. So to give you a sense of our universe, we operate Canada, US, Mexico, Brazil, all of Western Europe, Japan, Korea, China, Australia, and New Zealand. And we're in the process of opening in the Philippines and Thailand. So that's our universe at the moment. Which are the best markets? I would say if I go through the regions, you know, North America is very solid, both Canada and the US. We've been very happy with, you know, throughout, you know, great countries. People care about the environment. LATAM is a little more difficult, partly because of the overall macroeconomic situation that's happening in the region and the general sort of, you know, lack of growth that brings to the economy, which we definitely are affected by. If we hop over to Europe, UK and France are by far really big areas of growth for us, and that's because the people in those regions are really adamantly frustrated by the problem of garbage and are speaking up loudly. And companies are hearing that, and they're calling us to help bring solutions. The rest of Europe is about as good as North America. Asia and Oceania are similar to North America, and they're solid and growing nicely with people of concern.
I'm surprised that Germany, which I thought was one of the forerunners when it came to all things green, you don't mention it. Is that because it's very mature, or is that because it's only lip service?
You know, it's a really interesting question. So, you know, we do operate in Germany. We're even launching Loop in Germany next year. So we have business in Germany. But I consciously didn't mention Germany, not because it's so far ahead. This is the crazy part. In, you know, Germany is technically a more advanced recycling market than the UK or France, but not meaningfully more advanced. Here's the key difference. In Germany, and this is a crazy thing, it is legal to call incineration recycling. So the problem is this, you know, Germany burns about half of its garbage, yet the consumers in Germany think that everything is being recycled. And because there isn't consumer concern, there's way less need for organizations like retailers or brands to do anything differently.
That's
the complete opposite in France and the UK. There, you know, they call everything what it is, and consumers are really pissed off and they're asking for change.
Interesting. So let's talk about your fans. We talk about Uber brands having Uber targets, which are usually people who are kind of crazy about what you're doing, who spread your word of mouth, but also who are for the brand kind of the muse, the people who they test their ideas on first. Do you have something like that at TerraCycle?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. So our Now, again, we're different because we're a service, right? So the way to think about our recycling programs is there's three customers. The customer who really pays the bill are retailers and brands. They're the ones that, you know, fund these programs. Now, the people who actually use the programs, the location leaders, this is someone who would sign up to one of our programs or pay for a zero waste box and put it out and start collecting and recycling. Those people have a very specific demographic. They're the super users of TerraCycle. They tend to be always female, between the ages of 20 and 60, somewhere in there, but always women. That's the key, you know, because the age range is big, but the sex demographic is almost always female. Now, they're the ones who set up the programs and run the TerraCycle recycling programs. And then both boys and girls, men and women, you know, all ages participate, because they're the amount of work to actually just put a candy wrapper in a box or a toothbrush in a box is much lower. The real work is the setting it up and running it, which again is that very specific demographic. And in fact, it echoes our employee base. You know, TerraCycle, we're about 300 office-based employees, and over 62% female, I think, is our current, you know, male-to-female split, because a lot of these type of folks fall in love with the company and want to come work for us.
Now, it bears the obvious question, have you found any explanation for why it would be so much skewed to women when it comes to the kind of activism behind your brand, if you like?
Yeah, these are hypotheses, not proven, but our hypothesis is that basically women care about sustainability, generally speaking, much more than men. And if I had to guess why do women care, I think it's because perhaps of motherhood, this idea of caring about others, you know, is maybe a little bit more of a female trait than a male trait. Men tend to be a bit more selfish in their thought process. These are very black and white generalizations, but those are my guesses.
And do I hear something that's also very typical, which is you don't have much trouble in hiring. In fact, people raise their hand and want to join you, and they want to join you for your purpose.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And not just do we not have trouble hiring. I mean, we're flooded with people all the time asking, you know, are there job openings and so on. And even with students, you know, we have almost every summer over 100 people volunteering for the business, you know, helping out, doing whatever they can. And it's that idea of the purpose is so strong and so easy to understand. We have people wanting to just help and, you know, donate their time, do anything they can for the mission of what we stand for.
And does that apply as well to the parts that are not so visible that you described earlier, i.e. the people who do kind of the hard work in the lab or who, you know,
less
actually...
Less so. Okay. Yes, it's a good question. I think the more industrial it gets, the less we see that happen.
Okay. So on that end, you still need to acquire talent and be competitive to get those engineers, the chemical or other, into your company.
Absolutely. I think the closer you get to sort of, you know, the money-making engine aspect, the less people are excited to volunteer and help and so on. And the more you get into the mission and or exciting aspects, that's where people really want to help and do so just out of the goodness of their hearts.
Right. And so how do you do that organizationally? I mean, you're incredibly spread. You just described to us, you're literally around the world. And I would think that at the end, your operations break down into tiny fractions of little collector units that are probably in the tens of thousands. How do you manage that organizationally?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we have a global team that sits in our headquarters with each of our various operational functions. So like a head of operations, head of finance, head of IT, and so on and so forth. And then on each country, there are country managers who then report into these global leads. You know, that creates sort of an organizational structure approach. But the bigger lesson here is that we try to make everything behave the same, even though it looks different from the outside. So every waste stream, we have to figure out how to collect it, how to process it, and then how to make the whole business model work. And whether you're doing that for cigarette butts or dirty diapers or whatever you may be choosing, it ends up falling into the same architecture. In fact, even the way we built the Loop Engine was trying to echo what we already do, which is to influence brands, you know, to embed our platform, and then to influence retailers to do the same.
Now, in many of the companies we talk to, they have kind of what we call an artist and an operator, because we often find that the people who have the ideas, the creativity, the designers, etc., might not be the most disciplined operators, etc. Would we find that at TerraCycle as well? Or are you Mr. Renaissance Man, CEO, COO, combined CFO, etc.?
You know, we would. I would say, you know, I definitely do some of the sort of operations side, but it's not my favorite area. I like much more the creative sales area. And so because of that, you would see my leadership team being thickened much more on the operational side. So, for example, we have very, very strong, you know, sort of almost self-reliant folks in finance, legal, accounting, ops, and so on. And I can really run it hands off. Now, you know, the other side of the business, it's really, really great folks as well, but I tend to get a little bit more involved because it's also an area where I can add value. Very similar, you know, in Loop, which is a new concept there, I hired a chief operating officer who manages 60% of the Loop staff, which is about 100 people now. But the more marketing, creative development, new business model ideation, all that, all those functions I would still take on directly. And right. This has been... But then on the scale up and thickening and finding efficiencies, that's a little bit of, you know, of where I would want to bring on other folks who have a real passion for that.
Right. And we talked a couple of times about Loop. So I want to get to that here at the end. One of the criticisms that I also heard is, well, you know, recycling will never be the best approach. It can never be perfect. And shipping around waste certainly isn't a great carbon footprint model. Is Loop one of the answers? Can you explain a little bit what Loop is? And then how do you see the future of this whole area of how we treat waste, or should there even be no waste in the first place?
Well, look, I would completely agree with these criticisms that recycling is not the foundational answer to garbage. I think recycling, and I say this as a recycling company, is a solution to the symptom of waste, but not a solution to the root cause of waste.
Right.
So look, today we live in a disposable world, which means we have to recycle as much as possible, and we need to integrate as much recycled content back into products as possible. It goes without saying, and it's absolutely critically important. But we also, at the same time, need to rethink our relationships with products so that we don't create waste to begin with. It's what you said, like solve waste at the root cause. Now, you know, Loop is an example answer to that. You know, is it the silver bullet answer? Probably not. I think we need a whole range of answers. But Loop tries to solve that by effectively shifting major manufacturers' products from being single-use, disposable, and owned by the consumer in the end, to durable, multi-use, beautifully designed, but always borrowed by the consumer and owned by the manufacturer. And with Loop, you know, we are able to create a platform where there's no need to recycle, there's no need to dispose, and everything goes into reuse.
Just to explain, it's basically steel bottles or containers, is my understanding. And it's the old milkman model where people get their products, whether it's shampoo or dishwashing detergent or other, in a stainless steel container. And once they're done, somehow it gets back, right?
Yes, that's generally correct. Just to clarify, you know, about half the containers are alloys like aluminum and stainless steel. A lot of them are made from glass. We even have engineered plastic. There's hundreds and hundreds of products, you know, from toothbrushes all the way to laundry detergent to orange juice. So there's a whole range of packaging aesthetic. But the general idea is what you said. It's a reinvention of the milkman, but done in a very big and modern way, where it's embedded into major retailers like Carrefour and Tesco in Europe, or Walgreens and Kroger in the United States. And so the simplification is you can now buy all your favorite brands in these durable refillable packages. If you buy them online, you know, through one of these retailers, they're delivered to you and then picked up from you. And then instead of going to waste, they're going to reuse. And then the same happens if you later buy in store. You can buy it at the store and take it back to the store later to get your deposits back.
And what's TerraCycle's ownership in that? Do you own the intellectual property only? Do you own the containers? Do you even own the kind of logistics in there?
So with Loop, what we try to do is only do what no one is doing today, which is two things, and very specific things. The first is we are the organizer of the system. You know, so we are the rules of Loop. We are Loop, you know, as the brand, as the overall rules and ways you have to behave to be allowed in the platform, you know,
right,
which, simply speaking, are the redesign of your products and packages to be reuse compliant. So that's sort of like owning the idea of what is organic. From an operational standpoint, we do the waste management function, which is the pickup, sort, store, and cleaning of the packaging. So instead of the packaging ending up in a landfill or a recycling center, it ends up in a Loop facility where the function is basically clean and then sent back to the manufacturers for refill.
Gotcha. Fascinating. Well, we're already running out of time. I want to thank you again. This was fantastic. It's really exciting things you work on. Tom, if listeners now want to find out more, what's the best single place to kind of get an introduction to TerraCycle?
If you're interested in TerraCycle, which is the collection of recycling and then use of recycled materials, you'd visit TerraCycle.com. And if you're interested in Loop, which is the reuse platform, you would visit LoopStore.com.
Excellent. And you, dear listener, you can, of course, always reach us. We're at info@uberbrands.com, and that's spelled with a U-E, as it should be. Tell us if you liked the show, and if you did, make sure you rate us and spread the gospel amongst your friends. And with that, Tom, I want to thank you again, and see you all next time.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time today.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.